This conference will now be recorded.
Good afternoon. It's 3 p.m. Tuesday, September the 1st. We'll go ahead and call our meeting to order. The first item is the roll call, and I'll go ahead and call the roll call. Spencer H. Smith, Mayor, is present. Michael Blomquist, Mayor Pro Tem.
Michael Blomquist, Mayor Pro Tem, is present.
Thank you. Jennifer McCann, place one.
Jennifer McCann, place one, is present.
Okay, thank you. Jacqueline Soriano Fontaine, place three.
This is Jacqueline Soriano Fontaine, place three, present.
Okay, thank you. John Ryder, place four.
Councilman Ryder, place four, present.
Okay, thank you. Jody Nicholas, place five.
Jody Nicholas, place five, present.
Okay, City Manager David Mitchell.
City Manager David Mitchell, present.
Okay, thank you. City Secretary Julie Helsham.
City Secretary Julie Helsham, present.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Next item is a presentation by citizens. Citizens who desire to address the council on any matter may do so during this item. Please understand that while the council appreciates hearing your comments, state law, Texas Government Code 551.042, prohibits them from, one, engaging in discussion other than providing a statement of specific factual information or reciting existing city policy, and two, taking action other than directing staff to place the matter on a future agenda. Please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes.
If there is any citizen that would like to make a presentation at this time, please press star six to unmute your mic.
Good afternoon. This is Linda Nash, 3006 Sundance Drive. I just have one thing. I wanted to see if we can place on the agenda at a future date about funding the Corona bags that are given out to the citizens in Harker Heights. Our next event will be the 26th of September, and the city of Killeen has been giving our city of Harker Heights the items in the bag, and this is from the Bell County COVID-19 task force. They have been supplying us with the items of going to Corona bags, and I just would like to have it placed on the agenda to see if our city can provide those items.
Okay, Ms. Nash, the city manager and the assistant city manager are present. They have that item. Do you have anything else for us?
That's it, Mayor. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you for your input. Again, is there anyone else that would like to speak? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to item three, public hearings. Number one, conduct a public hearing to receive and discuss a presentation regarding the voluntary annexation of right-of-way along Wurz Path, described as approximately 2.806 acres of the right-of-way of Wurz Path, adjacent to the city of Harker Heights, Texas. Planning and Development Director.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. This is Joseph Molise, Director of Planning and Development for the City of Harker Heights. And this is the first of two public hearings required by the Texas Local Government Code in which annexation occurs. If you'll proceed to the next slide, you'll see a map of the annexation area. So a little bit of a background. Bell County has issued a letter to the City of Harker Heights requesting annexation of Warriors Path. We had a public hearing in which the City Council granted that resolution granting a look at that annexation request on July 28, 2020. And so since that time, staff has prepared a service plan, which is attached as Exhibit B, and has initiated the annexation process. So in summary, the service plan is the plan that the city puts together It is to demonstrate the requirements that the city has in order to serve and maintain an annexation area. And in this case, because it's only a right-of-way, that service plan is limited to infrastructure-related requirements as far as the right-of-way, such as police and fire protection, maintaining the road, obviously, and then, of course, the storm sewer and any sidewalks that would go in Warriors Path. So that service plan is attached as Exhibit B and is available for your review and for the citizens' review, as is this map showing the annexation area and then a specific survey for that. So this being the first of the public hearings, the second one we have scheduled for Tuesday, September 8th, beginning at 5 p.m. at your regular city council meeting. And then following those two public hearings, the next step would be actually adopting an ordinance to annex this property, which we have tentatively scheduled for September 22nd at 5 p.m. at your regular meeting. This concludes my presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Okay, any questions from the council? Mr. Blomquist.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Molise, upon annexation, I assume that we will have easements on the west and east sides of this annexation portion. Is that correct?
Mr. Blomquist, this is Joseph Molise, Mayor Pro Tem Blomquist. We are annexing only the right-of-way. There are easements in place if they're existent on the school side, which is our side of the road, because we did that as part of the plat for the school. I know that Nolanville has, in the platting process or in the concept phase, shown easements along that. But to my knowledge, the section that we're annexing has actually already been widened per our specifications. So we shouldn't theoretically need much more easement beyond that. We have the right-of-way width, enough right-of-way width to put in the sidewalk that we need on our side. Nolanville has enough to put in the sidewalk on their side. So we're only annexing the portion that we've already improved.
That's what I was getting to, was the sidewalk on the east side that
yes.
Nolanville is going to put in. So that's still on track that they're going to put that sidewalk on along that annexation portion that would go forward. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I spoke to Nolanville city manager a couple of weeks ago, and we reiterated our position that we would not be implementing that sidewalk. We wouldn't be putting it in, and we would more than likely create an agreement with Nolanville for maintenance of that. It is still Nolanville's goal to seek state funding for that sidewalk as part of the Warriors Path widening project. And in that case, we would be partners with them in that, because we'd be looking at widening the rest of Warriors Path and placing the sidewalks along its entire length on both sides. So we'd be partners with Nolanville on that. But again, we would create a maintenance agreement in which they would maintain their side.
Okay. I just want to make sure that Nolanville's seen eye to eye with us on this then. So that's not something that they're going to say, oh, you've annexed this portion of the road, you can do the sidewalk now. So
no, we've already had that discussion with our city manager.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Councilmember Fontaine.
Yes, Mayor. Thank you. This is Councilwoman Jacqueline Soriano Fontaine, place 3. The impact, the financial impact of this annexation, do we have a amount of how much this will cost us to annex, or is this a seamless annexation and it will not affect our budget?
That's a great question, Councilwoman Fontaine. So in reality, yes, there's always a cost associated with an annexation, because this is an asset to the city, but it's also a liability. We're gaining the road that was built that we frankly paid for in association and partnership with KISD, Bell County, and Nolanville, but we are also obligated to maintain that section of road as long as we maintain that part of our city. So the initial financial impact has already been paid. We've widened the road, we've paid for the improvements, but we will now be required to maintain the road in perpetuity from this point. So that would be the liability that we've inherited if we annex.
We get a ballpark figure of what that looks like at our next meeting?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. Or David, do you have anything for that?
I don't, Councilwoman, I don't have anything in particular on cost, but we can put something together. Mark Hagg can put something together on what the road maintenance. I mean, we obviously, this roadway, since it was completely reconstructed, should have at least a 20-year lifespan. It will need some maintenance along the way. The other issue with it is that, you know, we did work with KISD and Nolanville to build this roadway, and if we don't annex it, it stays in the county, they are not going to maintain it. So the issue you have is we put an asset out there and there's going to be no maintenance on it, hence the reason we need to annex it, so that it becomes our issue as far as maintaining it. Otherwise, we have an asset that we built that there's just nobody looking after.
Right.
They would continue to maintain it as they do county roads, but that's at a different maintenance level than we expect in the city.
And I want us to be seamless, because once we get those numbers out, our citizens will see we're doing this, and we're looking down 20 years down the road where we'll have to be having to utilize to fund money in particular to make sure that street stays the way it should be.
Right.
And to the highest standards of Harker Heights. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Good. Mayor Pro Tem Blomquist.
This is Michael Blomquist, Mayor Pro Tem. Just to add on with the, if I remember correctly from seeing previous versions of this road for our thoroughfares throughout the city, the northern portion of this road, when it goes up, is one of the, if I remember, it was a hazardous, or it allowed heavy vehicle traffic, but it wasn't on this portion of the road. Is the status going to change as far as what type of thoroughfare it's going to be considered?
That's an excellent question, Mayor Pro Tem. I believe that this road is not part of our heavy, or part of our heavy vehicle network, but I will verify that. And the reason I would suspect it's not is because the majority of it's not in control of the city of Harker Heights.
Right, but I just wanted to make sure, because that, I do remember, I think it was heavy vehicle traffic was authorized or allowed on that northern portion of that road up to Nolanville, up to the road there. It's from a previous, you know, a few meetings back that we've had, we've showed overlays on the thoroughfares throughout the city, and if I remember correctly, that northern portion of it did allow, because there were some commercial vehicles that Nolanville allowed to park for some of their citizens on that portion. And so I just want to make sure that we're going to keep the status the same, as far as we're not going to have that change into a heavy vehicle type of a avenue.
Right, so per the Code of Ordinances, the heavy vehicle routes are actually listed in the Code of Ordinances and requires a council action in order to add that. So you will have 100% power in determining whether this becomes a heavy vehicle route. What you've seen in the thoroughfare plan is actually labeling this road as a major collector. And so a major collector is a large road that carries traffic between major centers like neighborhoods and financial districts. And all heavy vehicle roads are at least major collectors, but not all major collectors are heavy vehicle roads. So at this point, unless the city manager corrects me on this, I don't see a reason to make this a heavy vehicle route, but that's not to say at some future date that a council might make that decision. But again, that decision would be an ordinance that has to go through the city council.
Okay. I mean, obviously we're going to have lots of school buses traveling this route, but just want to make sure that we're not going to change it to a commercial route through the city coming in off of I-14 or something like that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Mitchell.
And that's a great point, Council. This is David Mitchell, city manager. Right now, I don't believe it is a heavy truck route. Again, you as a council can set that, as Mr. Molise has indicated. And then that's a great point, because it is supposed to connect I-14 at some point in the future. Now, that's pretty good ways out there, but it is. And at that point, the council will have to decide if you want to do that or not. You know, again, way the traffic is right now, I would say no. But again, that'll be at a council decision at that time. It is viewed, for at least vehicular traffic, to be a pretty major reliever for 2410 once it's connected to I-14, because now you have to kind of cut down 2410 to get to that area where, when it connects to I-14, you'll be able to go down I-14 and then turn down on Warriors Path to access that area. And as you know, there's a large number of subdivisions, including, I believe, we're hearing now, Mr. Sutton's property's fixing to develop into a subdivision. So a lot of residential houses will be in that area.
Okay. Anything else, Mr. Molise?
Yes, this is Joseph Molise, planning director. So I was able to pull up the code, section 76.04, identifies truck routes, and there's 9 of them, and Warriors Path is not listed as one of those. So we can verify that it's not. I'll also point out that we will eventually control through our annexation process both sides of the street, so not just the street, but the rights of way. And once we maintain those controls, our ordinances would be in effect for those, which would ban the ability for heavy vehicles to park on the side of the road. So when we finish annexing Warriors Path, that won't be an issue as well, that those trucks that are pulling over on the side, I know exactly where you're speaking of, they won't be able to do that anymore.
All right, thank you.
Anything else from the council for Mr. Molise? Okay, this is a public hearing. Is there anyone to speak for or against this item? Again, this is a public hearing. Anyone to speak for or against this item?
If there is any citizen that would like to speak at this time, please press *6 to unmute your mic.
Okay, hearing none, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing. There's not going to be any action taken on this item at this time, as shown in your packets. The time is now 3:15, and we'll go ahead and adjourn this regular session, and we'll call to order the workshop. And for the workshop agenda, item number 5, will be new business, and number one, receive and discuss a presentation regarding potential residential parking ordinances. Planning and Development Director.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. This is Joseph Molise, Director of Planning and Development for the City of Harker Heights. As you recall, we workshopped these two ordinances a few weeks ago, and in that workshop, we presented the results of the virtual public forum and made some recommendations as far as how those comments could be addressed and reflected in the potential ordinances. And so I'm back today to kind of show you how, or walk you through how we made those, how we implemented those corrections. So if you'll go to the next slide, please. The first thing we talked about was the heavy vehicle ordinance. And in that one, a lot of the comments that came through regarding this ordinance and staff wholeheartedly agreed was that the definition or the requirements of heavy vehicles was out of date, that modern, you know, stock off of the parking lot vehicles are exceeding those heavy vehicle requirements. And so through doing some research, looking at what our current parking space requirements are, looking at what the average size of, let's say, a dually, which is probably one of your more wider personal vehicles are, staff is recommending that we change up the requirements for a heavy vehicle, at least in the length, width, and height. So increasing it to 20 feet in length, increasing the width to 8 feet, which my research says is about the average width of a dually. And then finally increasing the height to 10 feet, which gives a lot of people that like to put lifts on their trucks and, you know, basically have four-wheel drives with their lights and so forth to be able to go underneath that definition of heavy vehicle. So that's the first section that changed. The other requirement that was given to staff was to make some kind of an acknowledgement about the existence of deed restrictions and the city's position on that. So C there says nothing herein shall be construed to counter or take precedent over existing deed restrictions or restrictive covenants, which basically means that these are the requirements for a heavy vehicle, but if you've got deed restrictions that are stricter than that, this doesn't give you permission to violate those deed restrictions. So it basically states that we acknowledge that there are deed restrictions and that, you know, our actions does not give a citizen the right to violate those, which I believe meets the comments that were presented to staff. Are there any questions about either of these before we move on?
Okay, Mr. Blomquist.
This is Michael Blomquist, Mayor Pro Tem. When we use the term heavy vehicle, we're excluding the RVs, is that correct?
Well, actually, this is Joseph Molise, Planning Director. An RV is considered a heavy vehicle because it meets those criteria. However, when you get to this section of the code where it says it's prohibited for a heavy vehicle to be parked in a residential area, it will exempt RVs at that point.
I know, I just wanted to, are we gonna say exempt up front, or are we gonna wait till, you know, because people are gonna read this and say, well, RV fits these descriptions here.
It is so exempted in the section following this because RVs are not allowed to be parked in the street.
Okay.
And so we wouldn't want to exempt RVs now and then go back and try to enforce an ordinance that says they can't be parked in the street because
okay,
it would look
sense.
Like we contradict
about the streets. That's correct, thank
yes,
you.
Okay, so the next slide has to do with the exemptions to heavy vehicles. And so the first two were standard language that we had already, but we added point C, which is that another exemption is by an employee of a public utility, police department, fire department, ambulance service, or tow truck operator while that employee is on call. That again came from the citizen responses to the virtual public forum, and it's something that I've personally seen where you do have on call. It could even be our own water department may have to take his vehicle home to be on call, and it would qualify as a heavy vehicle. So that made sense to allow first responders in there, and so staff recommends that that we do that, and this is based on your feedback as well. The next slide has to do with what we were just discussing, which was exempting the RVs. So there were two statements with the RVs that were made. One was that they should be exempted from the heavy vehicle parking, but two was that we needed to reiterate that you're not supposed to be occupying that RV, that it's there for parking purposes, not for occupation. So C of 72.21 basically says that it'll be unlawful for anybody to park a heavy vehicle in a residential area with the exception of an RV. The second sentence is completely new, and it says it shall further be unlawful to occupy or treat as a residence or accessory dwelling unit a recreational vehicle on residentially zone property. So therefore, now that section explicitly states that you cannot live in an RV. That was already implicit in the zoning, but now you've got a separate section in the transportation code that also reinforces that idea. And again, that was brought to my attention by the council, and so I placed that in there. And finally, 72.23, reserved. That was the section of the code that actually gave all the requirements for a heavy vehicle parking permit. So as you recall, the entire crux of this ordinance was to remove heavy vehicle parking permits. And so we struck that from the exemptions in the previous list, and then we have struck this section of the code that describes the process for receiving that parking permit. So we left it reserved. That way, if we ever want to put anything else in there, there's a placeholder for us. So that should conclude the heavy vehicle portion of the ordinance. I'd be happy to answer any questions about that.
Any questions from the council? Councilmember Fontaine.
This is Councilmember Jacqueline Soriano Fontaine, place three. I just want to say that this looks really good, and thank you for adding our recommendations, and I look forward to seeing this applied.
Thank you very much.
Okay, anybody else from the council? Okay, if you'll continue, Mr. Molis.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. So the next ordinance to discuss is the residential parking ordinance, or what we've been calling the parking on the grass ordinance. So after multiple consultations with the city attorney, we've kind of gotten a good format that everybody's comfortable with. And so his first recommendation was at the beginning of the section on parking in general that we add some definitions, because we refer to these phrases later on in the parking ordinance, and it makes sense to have those clearly defined. So the first one is all-weather surface. We've been talking about that since day one, that you have to park a vehicle on an all-weather surface per our code. And so in the original code, all-weather surface was given, you know, with a definition, all-weather surface such as, you know, concrete and asphalt. The city attorney advised that we not have like an example list, you know, just such as, but that we actually define it. And so we have what would be supplemented to the definitions is a definition for all-weather surface, which basically means an impervious surface consisting of asphalt, concrete, or similar permanent hard surface material, you know, essentially there to prevent ruts, mud, dust, loose material, and other nuisances. So we've got a clear definition of that. The next step with that would be when we start dealing with grandfathering, where we talked about what about people with existing non-conforming parking surfaces. Rather than try to spell that out every time, we decided to create what's called an alternative parking surface. So when we get to the grandfathering section, it'll refer to the next definition, where an alternative parking surface is an all-weather surface that can also be constructed with decomposed granite or pavers. So in other words, it gives some other options beyond just the asphalt concrete for surface potential. And again, this is to allow people to more inexpensively augment their existing parking to come into compliance. The next issue had to do with how we were asked to exempt trailers, in particular utility trailers, under certain circumstances. So the city attorney felt it was very important to define trailer and utility trailer. So I pulled these definitions essentially from TxDOT traffic standards as far as how trailers defined. So a trailer is defined to mean basically anything pulled by a vehicle except for a pole trailer or a semi-trailer. And both of those have in common that they only have one axle. And then they connect to the truck. So the pole trailer are those big giant ones that you'd see carrying those construction beams, where it's essentially a pole with some wheels attached to it. And then a semi-trailer is obviously the big trailers pulled by your semis. And then the utility trailer is more specifically a trailer that's typically an open top type of trailer used for carrying small loads. We put a size cap on it because, you know, obviously you can get a flatbed trailer that can hold a bobcat or a front end loader, and that's probably not what the intent was of the comments that we got from the general public. So we limited it to 20 feet in length and 7 feet in width. When I was looking at Home Depot trying to buy a trailer or looking for rental, the biggest I saw for utility trailers was 16 feet. So I think the 20 feet was more than enough to deal with some variation with that. The next slide has to do with general standards. So in our code of ordinances, we have a section in the zoning for parking. The first part was definitions, which we just saw we were adding to. The next part has to do with the actual design standards for parking spaces. And in this one, the city attorney advised, as I mentioned before, that we pull out the such as kind of laundry list for the definition of all weather surface and just say all weather surface, knowing that there's a definition. So that got changed to modify that. But the big thing is obviously section 155.069. That's a brand new section added to the code that has to deal with parking in residential areas. So this is the section that specifically deals with the recommendations and requests that we got from the citizens, and then the orders I got from this council as far as modifying the ordinance. So the first one was that I actually streamlined the ordinance to make it a lot simpler to read. And basically it says that except as provided herein, no person shall cause or allow or permit or basically park a vehicle, trailer, or RV to be stopped or parked in the front, side, or rear yard of a residentially zoned property except on an all-weather surface. So at its core, it means that you can't park in any of those yards unless you're on an all-weather surface. Now, it does say that there are some potential exemptions to that, which we will get to, but the terms front yard, side yard, rear yard are already defined in our zoning code and have very specific definitions as to how to identify those. So this makes it very easy for staff and code enforcement to determine if somebody's parked in one of those zones. And in particular, when you start looking at the amount of surface cover that we're going to prevent be covered with parking, we know to what that is referring. So the next section talks about how it'll be an affirmative defense if you're parked there for an emergency, as long as you move it within 72 hours. The city attorney very wisely had me include an actual hour limit to this because the original ordinance just said a reasonable time. And of course, that's very subjective. So 72 hours was recommended as a time period because later on, if we start, well, there's no if, you asked us to discuss other options for residential parking, like parking in the street, parking in front of a residence, and so forth. It was suggested that we limit people from storing cars on the street, and 72 hours is probably a good definition of that, too, of when that's storing a car versus parking a car. You know, 72 hours is the weekend, so somebody that's home for the weekend would be parked for that amount of time, and so we decided at the advice of the attorney to be consistent when we looked at definitions like that. So this is kind of thinking towards the future when we start looking at other potential ordinances. The next slide talks about the parking spaces in general. So this is where we get into the actual rules and requirements for additional parking. And what it says is if you are wanting to make parking in addition to what's required in the code, so that's what Table 21D is. It's that section of the code that says, you know, if you have parallel parking, the parking spaces have to be so big. If you have 90-degree parking, 45-degree parking, and so forth, it gives the definition, but then it also gives the number of parking spaces required for each zoning unit, whether it's a single family, two family, multifamily. And so if you're wanting to build parking in addition to those, then you can use an alternative parking surface. So what that means in plain English is, the guy living down the street in Country Trails that has his trailer parked in the grass next to his driveway, if he's already got his required two spaces, which is what's required of a single family residential, that trailer has to be parked on an alternative parking surface. So that gives the individual the opportunity to use concrete or asphalt if they wish, but they can also use those alternative materials like decomposed granites or pavers. And so it gives a somewhat cost-effective means of adding impervious parking without having to clearly define who's exempted, who's not exempted, how many spaces should we add or should we limit. Basically, anything beyond what you're required to do can be alternative parking surface. And the way the code is written now, and this is where I'll need your feedback, is that includes future construction. So if I have a house built tomorrow or the day after this ordinance is passed, the code says I have to have two parking spaces. But if I ask my home builder to build me a separate space for my RV that I'm gonna park there, this ordinance would allow him to use pavers or decomposed granite for that parking. So that's some input that I would like from the city council, but I felt that at the time of this writing, that they, as long as they're meeting their required parking, it's something that we probably would have allowed at the future anyway. And then points one and two have to do with limiting it to 50% of the area of the front and side yard, and then 25% of the rear yard. And it specifically says additional parking spaces so that we eliminate that confusion of, does that include my deck? Does that include my swimming pool? No, it's just the parking spaces that can't exceed those percentages. So before we move to the next slide, I would certainly like your feedback on that point C as far as the alternative parking materials.
This is Mayor Smith. If someone wants to put that much impervious surface down and they come to the city, do they have to calculate the impact on the drainage on the adjacent properties?
This is Planning Director Joseph Melise. That's an excellent question, Mr. Mayor. And the answer is, it depends. The reality is that they have to pull a permit for that. And once they pull a permit, the building official will make a determination based on his experience, based on the topography and so forth, whether or not we might need a study. More than likely, he will consult with the Assistant Public Works Director and make that determination if we need to have something engineered back to us. Okay. So it's done on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Blomquist.
This is Michael Blomquist, Mayor Pro Tem. Something you might want to consider, especially with parking, making parking surfaces in the backyards, especially out in my part of the town, there's a large number of septic systems. So that's something that's going to have to be considered before they just go draw permits to try to put, you know, improved surfaces or whatever type of surfaces they want to try to put on 25% of their rear yard if they want to make their own little small parking lot back there. But that's something that, you know, you're going to have to be aware of, or maybe get Bell County involved in, because there's supposed to be so much surface area, you know, if you're going to have the gray water that distributes throughout, if it's an aerobic system or versus a traditional with lateral lines out there. So that's just something to consider.
And Mayor Pro Tem, thank you for bringing that up. That's actually part of our permit process now. Anytime we get a permit involving a septic system, we do send that to Bell County Health Department, who we have contracted to review our septic systems and inspect them. And we advise citizens even before they, you know, when they're in the I'm thinking about this phase, what do I need to do? That's the first thing we advise them, is to contact Bell County Health Department. As you recall, when we had that conditional use permit for that accessory dwelling unit on Walden Creek Crossing, as you remember, that was the first thing we told the applicants when they met with us, is that, you know, it's all well and good, but you need to talk to Bell County Health, because if you don't have the capacity in your septic system to add that, you won't be able to move forward. So it is built into our permitting process, but I will reinforce that with staff, that anything, we know which areas have septic, that anytime anybody wants to do anything, that we'll make sure that Bell County is notified if necessary.
All right, thank you.
Okay, please continue.
Okay, so the next slide has to do with the exceptions to the heavy vehicle parking. So this is where we get into the grandfathering and so forth. So the first one is, of course, parking of vehicles are owned or leased by the city while doing their job. Obviously, if we go to a construction site and we need to, you know, work on a pipe or something, there may not be an impervious surface, so we're exempted from that. Along those same lines, number two says that construction vehicles and utility companies are also exempted. And again, these are always in the course of their duties. But that doesn't necessarily mean they won't leave them there overnight. Obviously, a longer project may take time, but this is put in there to acknowledge that. The next one is the parking of agricultural machinery or implements, because again, your heavy farming vehicles, you're going to leave them, you know, where you are at night and then pick up where you left off the next day. The next slide covers the new ones. So these are the things that were added, and they should be highlighted on your in your packet. These are the things that were added following our discussions. The first two, 4 and 5, I'm going to talk about together. They look really in depth. What they really mean is this is covering our grandfathering. So the first one has to do with the actual grandfathered parking spaces. So we say that if you have an existing parking space, that you could be exempt from this ordinance. And then existing parking space is defined immediately thereafter as saying, a clearly defined area where the soil has been compacted due to extended use so as not to create ruts when parked upon in wet weather, and which is surfaced with gravel, provided said conditions existed prior to the effective date of this prohibition. So in other words, if you had a gravel parking on your land before this ordinance was adopted, you're automatically grandfathered. You don't have to bring it up to code. You don't need to report it to us. You're good to go. And so that specific section is designed, as well as number five, to deal with your smaller, older lots on the north side of town where you have homes that were built before we required concrete or asphalt driveway and parking. And then it also deals with your large lots on the southern and eastern side of town where you'll have your, you know, your R1R multi-acre lots where you might have a quarter mile driveway with some parking. So we were repeatedly asked by the citizens and the council to look at how to deal with larger lots, and we felt that this was a really good way of dealing fairly with them and dealing with anybody else with pre-existing conditions. So point five is the exact same thing, except it has to do with driveways, saying that if you have a pre-existing driveway that's not, you know, an all-weather surface, that that can remain the same. And as you recall, that was always the case, even in earlier drafts of this ordinance. We weren't going to require people to upgrade their driveways because, again, you have sections of the town where they don't exist, and you have, you know, acreage lots where you might have a quarter mile driveway, and that would be a pretty intense burden to require them to pave that. And finally, number six has to deal with the exceptions. We got numerous requests from the virtual public forum, and then the council agreed that we should probably go ahead and exempt you know those small utility trailers that are in the backyard that are not visible. So that's what number six deals with, the parking of any utility trailer that is screened to not be visible from a public street or right-of-way, provided it is empty and does not pose a risk of fire or contamination of the soil or water table. So as you recall, when we started this ordinance, the very first couple of slides that I presented, you know, about a year ago, had to do with why we would have this ordinance. One was for safety reasons, and, you know, especially with parking cars on the grass, you might start a grass fire or cars might leak chemicals. The other one had to do with aesthetics and how those cars parked in the front yard would look. Well, you know, the citizens very clearly thought that a trailer that was empty, like your standard utility trailer, like you might haul some wood behind or whatever, if it was empty and hidden from view, would satisfy those harms. They wouldn't have an aesthetic impact, and they wouldn't cause a fire or chemical hazard because they're empty trailers. And staff and city council agreed, so that's what number six looks like. Is we've created a definition of utility trailer so that it's a smaller trailer, and that as long as it's screened from public rights of way, where basically where our code enforcement officers can look, if they can't see it, then it would be exempted from this ordinance. And that is the last point of this ordinance. Like I said, I try to make it as short and painless as possible and easy to understand. This concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay, Mr. Blomquist.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is Michael Blomquist, Mayor Pro Tem. Joseph, on a couple points here. The first one, when you were talking about the vehicles with the 72 hours, if they haven't moved or whatever, what's to prevent a citizen who has a large number of vehicles from playing musical parking and moving them, you know, 10 feet, or they just switch places or something like that?
Well, the ordinance, this is Joseph Malise, Planning Director. So the ordinance dealing with 72 hours has to deal with an emergency. So my car broke down in a grassy area. You have 72 hours to move it. So there's no rotation of that. It has to be off of the grassy area. You can't move it 10 feet and then restart the clock. So okay. That's going to be the argument. So if they bring another vehicle and park it on there instead, then the code enforcement is going to keep a real close eye on that, and we may have to seek other means of prosecuting. So if it's a broken down car that's longer than 72 hours or that's rotating like that, then we have other options such as looking at the abandoned or junk vehicles sections of the code to start looking at whether or not we need to address it from that standpoint. There's also in the generic section of code enforcement under nuisances defined is rubbish. And sometimes a vehicle can't be established as a junk vehicle, which is a state term. It doesn't necessarily mean the vehicle's a piece of junk. We can also define a car as rubbish if it's sitting there and not moving, not being maintained. So we have some other tools that we can use at our disposal should that become an issue.
So say a citizen has a boat that's been parked in front of their house for 10 years and there's trees growing out of it, would that be considered a rubbish boat?
Under our code, more than likely an argument could be made that yes, it's a rubbish boat.
Okay. Chief Gadd, does that coincide with your If y'all sticker a vehicle, does that 72 hours fall within what y'all allow the citizen in order to move the vehicle?
Yes, sir. This is Phil Gadd, Chief of Police, Harker Heights. That does follow into our traffic codes.
Okay. Thank you. The next question, you kind of answered some of it when you were dealing with the stipulations under paragraphs 4, 5, and 6, but some of the, for the exemptions, we kind of talked about it a little bit in the previous workshop, was some of the larger tracts that some of the citizens have in Harker Heights where they're considered almost like a working farm. They had some farm equipment. One of the things we didn't really talk about is horse trailers. A lot of them have horse trailers. So that's something I can see that, you know, they're going to park their horse trailers probably where they normally will always park them. We might want to include that in the definition there because, you know, the horse trailer obviously is empty if there's no horses in it. So it's just sitting there, you know, waiting for transport or be used as farm equipment, I guess. But they do have, you know, with the parking, with the driveways, you know, you kind of, I think you answer the stipulations on their existing driveways. Most of them aren't improved surfaces. They've been used like that forever. Same thing with where they park. It's compacted soil. They have, you know, wherever they park their vehicles, that's where they reside for their residence. So I think we're going to answer the question there to make sure, because I did have some citizens give me some input on that as far as making sure that, you know, we weren't going to make it very cost inhibitive of them with this type of an ordinance, because it's not the intent what we're trying to, you know, reach here. But I would like to see the horse trailers added probably onto that to make sure that we're not going to preclude them from the trailer definition there.
This is Joseph Melise. I can certainly add that to it. I would think that agricultural machinery is the exemption number 3 would cover horse trailers. In particular, as a utility trailer, unless it's larger than 20 feet, an empty horse trailer would also be a utility trailer. So I think we're covered, but I'd be more than happy to add that maybe to number 3, you know, agricultural machinery implements, including horse trailers, if you would like.
All right. I think there are some horse trailers that are rather large. I don't know if we have any in the city, but there are some that do exceed that, I believe.
Right.
They have air conditioners on them and everything, so they're pretty high tech.
Okay, Mr. Blomquist, that's all your items? Okay, Councilmember Fontaine.
Thank you, Mayor. This is Councilwoman Jacqueline Soriano Fontaine, place 3. And as always, I want to see the impact that we would have if we had an infraction. So if I have my cars parked for 72 hours and I don't move it, how much is that going to cost me? What's the impact? Because the impact of when it comes to money, that's what motivates a lot of people. And so if we show them a list of this is what's going to happen in the event that you don't move your car in 72 hours, you're going to be penalized X amount of dollars. We need to show each infraction what that infraction is going to cost our residents, and that will motivate them to do the right thing because they don't want to have to pay an additional fee for the infraction.
And Council, Mr. Mitchell, go ahead.
Yeah, this is David Mitchell, City Manager. Council, I wanted to touch base a little bit on, give you some behind the scenes. You mentioned about parking on the street in specifics, and y'all did direct us to look at that. And I just want to let you know we are looking at that with Charlie. It is very difficult for us to get our hands around it, even for Charlie, trying to figure out ways that you could write it such that it's really enforceable. I mean, it, you know, goes to what was brought up earlier by Mayor Pro Tem. You play musical cars. And then they can make the argument, no, I didn't just move it. I went to work and came back and parked it. It's just 6 feet further down, but we don't know that. I mean, there's just no good way to enforce it. So, but we're looking at some things with Charlie. There may be some other creative things we can do, and we're not ready to bring that back to you, but that'll be a whole separate discussion for us to have once we've hammered that out with Charlie.
Okay. And Mr. Molish, do you have more for Councilmember Fontaine's item there?
Yes, sir, Mr. Mayor. So I wanted to point out to Councilwoman Fontaine to answer her question. This would be in the zoning code, so any violation of that would be the same as a zoning violation. And there are very specific, there's a very specific section of the code that deals with that. It's our general penalty, and I believe it's typically that $200 a day, or not to exceed $200 a day per occurrence, per violation. So it would be the same thing as any other violation of the zoning code.
Particular zone, you want to make your document user friendly. So if it deals with this, then you just add it as an attachment or an inclusion. closure, however you want to process it, but that gives you the opportunity to see it right offhand. And you don't have to go to another place to look at a table.
Absolutely. Yes, that's easy to do. Most of our ordinances that have to do with any kind of public nuisance have a penalty. As you recall, when we looked at the BYOB ordinance, there's the last section is penalty.
Sure.
And so it would be very easy for staff to add a penalty section to this code. And again, it would mirror the remaining zoning code violations, but that way it's in the same location as
this
ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Melise. Appreciate it.
Mr. Mitchell.
Yes, Councilmember Fontaine, I want to get some clarity on that. I'm kind of getting that maybe you're saying on the notice, perhaps, if we're giving like a citizen a notice about, you know, we're saying, hey, you need to move this within so much time that notice clearly states you could be fined up to this amount. I mean, we obviously don't know the judge would be the one that would ultimately determine that, but
sure,
you could be fined up to $200 a day.
Absolutely.
Is that kind of what you're saying versus
I'm saying that, and I'm saying the documents.
So okay.
It's two things that if we're transparent and they know right up front, okay, I'm going to have to pay $200 a day to have this here. Boom, I'm going to do whatever I have to do to get the vehicle out.
Okay, Mr. Blomquist.
This is Michael Blomquist, Mayor Pro Tem. Again, if this ordinance is adopted and approved, Joseph, we were talking about a period of what was it 1 year in order for everybody to come within compliance, or was it what was the date we set on that again?
Yes, sir. This is Joseph Molise, Planning Director. We had discussed 1 year for enforcement of the ordinance, so that would be your educational outreach period. And I did not cover that in this staff report, and I apologize for that. But yes, one of the other requirements that City Council asked us to do and that we've been saying from day one is that we will put together an educational outreach document, very similar to what we did with the mobile food vendor ordinance and the BYOB ordinance, where there'll be a simple, easy to use or easy to understand guide that we will insert into the water bills. We'll cycle that through. That's done on the bills are sent out in blocks. And so we'll start cycling those through the blocks, explaining that the ordinance was adopted on such and such date and will be enforced 1 year from that date, or we'll round it to like September 1st, October 1st, something so that it's easy to remember. And then we will also blast that through social media, through our public, our assistant city manager, actually, public relations director. And we will also create door hangers. So anytime we see somebody in violation, we'll place a door hanger in there saying, hey, by the way, did you know that we passed this ordinance? And starting on, whatever date, 2021, it will be a violation to have this vehicle parked in this situation. So, and we'll give that to code enforcement officers, maybe even the water department, like the meter readers, because they see as much of the city as the code enforcement officers do. But we'll have some pre-printed hangers that will give them information and outreach so they can contact my office if they've got any questions.
Okay. The one of the important things, the reason a lot of this came about is, we had some gross violators within the city that have caused consternation amongst the citizens that surround them. While we don't write ordinances to just address one citizen, we want to be equitable and fair across the board to all citizens. So we need to make sure that's our, everybody, that's clear that our intent is that we want to bring, order and stability to all of our citizens so that way they all know what to expect, and we don't have people taking advantage of the situation and being a gross violator, and I want to make sure we show that at the next public hearing, pictures of those gross violators, so that way people can, because that'll take a lot of the animosity, I think, out of some of the citizens that may come to voice their displeasure with this ordinance, because I've already received several emails and people trying to figure out why we're doing this. And we need to be clear and upfront with them so they understand that this is not an attack on the citizens. This is to try to bring order and stability to our town here, to make sure that we are all living and well together. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Ryder.
The gentleman with the boat with the tree growing out of it told me to tell you that it is actually, the motor's off of it now, and it's actually an antique planter.
He needs to deal with the mosquitoes then, too. Yeah.
And that was Councilman.
They're endangered.
That's good. Yeah, this is Mayor Smith. Joseph, I think the thing is with the community that we have also, I think that that education process is going to have to be continuous because, again, you know, we've got, you know, we have a military community, a lot of people coming and going, and they just need to have that awareness. And again, we have a number of people that are renters, and the thing is they'll be on those properties, so some of that stuff will apply to them. So to have that process in place so people are aware and so we don't end up all these like, well, nobody told me type of deal, okay?
That's an excellent point, Mr. Mayor, and what I'll do is I'll reach out to the finance department about maybe anytime somebody sets up a water service that we give them the handout on parking in their lawn as well, so that we do catch the new people that may have missed the round of water bills and so forth. So I'll talk to them about that as well.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Fontaine.
Yes, Mayor, thank you. This is Councilwoman Jacqueline Soriano Fontaine, Place 3. And as we start our campaign to bring these ordinances out, it would be good. I know Bob is on the line, and he writes what we've discussed on today, but I think that we also need to do a campaign via media, Facebook, and continue to push that this is coming and this is how it's going to come, and so that everybody's aware, so we have it on our bills, we have it on our Facebook page, we have it in the paper, any way that we could get it out so that our members could, our citizens could see what we're doing. And also, I would like to see a welcome letter to our new residents. So as we know that people are signing up for the water, that's a great opportunity to capture that information and send them a welcome letter and say, this is what we do, this is how we do business, and this is how you could reach out to us. Because the more we know, the better our citizen is going to, our city is going to be. So that's a big push for me, is to have that. All our new residents, hey, welcome to our city. This is how we do business in Harker Heights, and this is what's coming out.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Blomquist.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is Michael Blomquist, Mayor Pro Tem. To tag on what Mayor Smith and Councilwoman Jacqueline Soriano Fontaine stated, I think our outreach also should include the chamber, because I know the chamber has packages for the new people that are looking at Harker Heights. Also, the realty companies here, there's some that deal primarily just with rental properties. You know, so those are, we have a large transient population of military folks that come in here. But also we need to stress, you know, up front too, that this is not something that's new. A lot of the municipalities around us already have these ordinances. This is just something that Harker Heights is now trying to focus in on and address and, you know, bring us up to the standards so that way we, you know, have a great place and continue to have improvements here throughout the city for all our citizens. So thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? Anything else? Mr. Molise, Mr. Mitchell, you have anything else on this item?
Mayor, I'll just add that as I often tell staff, as density increases, that has a need for these type of ordinances. It's unfortunate that we have to go to these type of ordinances, but we've just found that some individuals will not be neighborly any other way. And we get the situations, as Mayor Pro Tem brought up, that we can show the pictures of, where you get a grotesque kind of example of a lot of vehicles on a lot, and the neighbor has a lot of rodents, mosquitoes. They can physically not, they could sell their property, but it'd be like a fire sale because nobody wants to live next to that. So that's what this ordinance was generated for, is to prevent those type of examples so that everyone can have peaceable enjoyment of their own property. So I think we're going a long way towards that, and I really do appreciate your comments in particular about getting the word out and how to do that. So we'll incorporate that as we bring it forward. So that's all I have, Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Okay, anything else from the council on the on this workshop agenda? Mr. Molise, thanks a lot for your presentation.
Thank you.
It's really good. Okay, time is, I got a bad reflection there. Time is 3:53 and we're adjourned.
This conference is no longer.